When you golf in Missouri, the courses are so close, you'll spend more time on the fairway than the freeway. Reserve a tee time at the Regal Osage National, designed by the king himself, Arnold Palmer. Take a cart ride on the wild side in the breathtaking surrounds of Payne's Valley, designed by Tiger Woods. And after the back nine, there's still world-class dining and distilleries, shops and spas, museums and more. Find your new golf MO in Missouri. Start planning your golf getaway at visitmo.com.
At Ritual, we're celebrating all moms this Mother's Day, current and aspiring. So whether you're looking for fertility support, natal choline, or our best-selling clinically backed prenatal, we've got you covered. Find your Ritual. Go to ritual.com/podcast and for a limited time, get 40% off your first month. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. Based on net sales from industry data, including Nielsen IQ, Stackline, and Numerator as of Q4 2024 in top five products.
Oh, baby. It's good to be back on another episode of Friends from Work. This is a podcast about all things in the Marvel Cinematic Universe, and it's hosted by me, Kyle Sconawill, and my friend, Robbie Earle. Thank you so much to all of you out there who are listening. I hope you are all doing well. It's been a little while, maybe not for you guys, but it's been a little while for Robbie and I because we had gotten to see these first two episodes of Ms. Marvel a good deal ahead of time. And so we recorded both of those episodes right away when we had access to that. And so now, Robbie, it's felt like a long gap. And oh my goodness, we chose a great day to get back into it.
Man, what a day for Marvel and Disney and Friends from Work. You're right. It's nice to be back, and it's nice to have so much to be excited about, as always, in Friends from Work fashion.
There are a lot of things that we need to tell y'all. I'm just going to do it. So we talked about this on Slack, but we never brought it up on an episode, again, due to the timing thing that I'm talking about. Robbie and I are going to the Thor Love and Thunder world premiere in Hollywood, California today.
Red carpet, baby.
Red carpet. I mean, for the first time ever, I can legitimately say, look for us on the red carpet. If you see two just shockingly handsome men walking with each other side by side down the red carpet, it's probably your boys from Friends from Work.
Yeah, if you get confused for a second and think that you're looking at Chris Hemsworth and Christian Bale, it's okay.
Right.
Understandable. But no, it's actually
right.
Kyle and I.
I am so excited. This has been something we've worked on for a long time. And it hasn't disappointed thus far. The invite itself was an actual poster. And it says, Marvel Studios would like to invite you to the world premiere with Christian Bale's face looking at me and Natalie Portman looking at me. And oh, it's lived up to the hype thus far. I gotta say, we'll be blowing up your social media feeds like crazy this week. So if you ever wanted to see what the behind the scenes of the red carpet is like, follow at the FFW podcast. If you're listening to this today, Wednesday or Thursday, we're probably already out there. So go right now to social media and check out what we've been posting. I can't wait to do this.
This is just so exciting for us too, because I think loving the Thor character and particularly the direction of that character since Taika came on board is one of the first things that you and I really bonded over as we were forming the beginnings of Friends from Work. So of all of the MCU films for us to be able to go see in person, I feel like this one holds a special spot on top of obviously just the crazy cast and excitement around the movie itself.
Yeah. And we both don't totally know what to expect. Will we get to meet any of the people? Probably not. But will I try? Probably. Will they get to meet us? Will there
we'll be
an
available
after party? I mean, could we find Taika Waititi and just schmooze him a little bit? Is this our first step into becoming consultants for Thor 5? Question mark.
Probably.
All these questions will be answered soon. If you can't tell, we're very excited about that. That's not the only reason we're excited today, though. I need to give a shout out to Neil Matosky for donating to the podcast. Let's go, Neil. Thanks for the donation.
Yes.
Always appreciate people that do that and want to single them out just so that they know how special that is for us. So thank you, Neil.
Seriously.
Also, Robbie, today is a massive day on Disney Plus.
Yeah.
For the first time ever, Doctor Strange and the Multiverse of Madness is available to stream now. So if for some reason you hadn't gotten out to the theater to see that film, now is your chance to go watch that. We have at least two episodes covering Doctor Strange already. So if you were waiting to watch it until now, go listen to those episodes. When you're finished, we have over 5 hours worth of content on that film. Not to mention, you can sign up for Friends from Work Plus and get even more content regarding Doctor Strange, his comic background, and a few other thoughts on that film. But also, Robbie, it was the Kenobi finale and Ms. Marvel episode 3 all in a single day. So Disney Plus is winning the day.
Jeez. And there's actually been a lot of news coming out on the Disney Plus front, particularly in Marvel World, where we live.
Breaking news?
Breaking news. And look, we've got so much to talk about today and in the coming weeks that we're going to try to hit some of this stuff as we have time to, because we're about to ramp up Thor coverage. We'll talk a little bit more about that and what that's going to look like. And then obviously Ms. Marvel is in full swing, and we'll come back to that in a second as well. But since the last time we were here, there have been a few Marvel projects announced. One, there's going to be a Wonder Man series that is on Disney Plus.
Okay.
And produced by Destin Daniel Crutton.
Interesting.
So that's interesting because, again, this is the Phase 4 thing, I guess, but we're getting into more deep cut characters. Now, I say Wonder Man's a deep cut character. He was actually a pretty significant part of the Avengers for a while through several different kind of bigger eras, but it's just a character that I don't think has ever gotten a ton of traction. He's just, it's an odd character, and we can get more into that as we go. It's not really worth bringing up a ton right now, but he has sort of an interesting history of relationships, and I'm curious to see where we go with that in the MCU, because on the one hand, he kind of has a history with Captain Marvel. On the other hand, he's got a really interesting history with Wanda Maximoff. And so there's been some speculation there because in the comics, and again, this is different because we're in the MCU and Vision has a different origin here. But in the comics, Vision's brain waves are sort of patterned after Wonder Man's. That actually comes up in the Tom King Vision comic that we read on Friends from Work Plus. So if you're curious about any of that, you can find that there as well. But needless to say, there will be a lot of speculation as we get closer to that project. But Kyle, there's also another project mm-hmm. that is even closer to kind of what you and I have already been talking about in prior Ms. Marvel episodes. And that is an announced Thunderbolts film. Finally. Right. Well, and this is one that I'm excited about for a couple reasons. First, I just am really glad that this is a movie and not a show.
Okay.
Just because I like the cast of folks that I think are going to be coming into play here enough that I don't want a situation where a lot of the folks that are introduced in Disney Plus are then kind of being relegated there. Like, I like that. Like we talked about, Multiverse of Madness pulled so much from WandaVision. I like that the Marvels is set to pull a good bit from Ms. Marvel, and I want to kind of keep that trend going of like, yeah, maybe the Disney Plus series are more like a solo series of comics, and then the movies are more of like these event moments. So that makes me excited just in and of itself. But then also, we found out that Eric Pearson has been tagged to write the film, and he's got a pretty solid MCU resume himself. He worked on Thor Ragnarok and Black Widow, which are two of you and I's favorites. And so he's someone that I generally kind of trust to work in the MCU.
Okay.
And just so people know, in case they're not tracking why that's relevant to our prior discussions, the Thunderbolts historically were sort of a Marvel Suicide Squad kind of thing, like your team of villains slash anti-heroes that are fighting for good, but they're not totally good guys. And so we've talked about that a lot in the context of potential Dark Avengers. And we've talked about like John Walker Cap or like Yelena as Black Widow. We've kind of been dancing around that topic for a while now. And this is the first time that it's actually confirmed that we are getting something like that. So I'm really excited to watch this one and to see how that starts taking shape. And I'm really looking forward to getting some confirmation as to which characters slash actors will be showing up there.
Gonna be fun. That's not all, though. I don't know if you saw this, Rob. Kevin Feige's been talking a little bit lately.
Yeah.
And he dropped some big news. I think we knew this already, but he officially confirmed that we will be knowing, quote, very soon where the MCU is headed. And that there's been a lot of hints already dropped in this phase four. So does that mean phase five, Secret Wars, is right away where my brain went? And yeah, we're going to find out soon. When would that be? I'm not 100% sure. I will say the D23 Expo, which is kind of Disney's big event, starts on September 9th. So could that be a spot where more of this is cleared up? And I definitely think that's at least a spot where more of these untitled films that are coming up will be given titles and dates. So,
right.
Still a lot of exciting things to be looking forward to for the next 5 years or so. I had a friend message and say, what do you think this is? I think it has to be Secret Wars. I mean, I could be wrong, but the only reason it wouldn't be Secret Wars is if we just look back and go, wow, Kevin made that too obvious. Like when he's right, like, hey, there's been hints. It's like, yeah, we heard the incursion talk. Like we get that.
Right.
If those are the hints, it's Secret Wars.
Yeah. Yeah. It's gotta be. And I do think, you know, it's maybe worth us remembering that we're so in the weeds on this stuff.
That's true. Maybe the hints aren't as obvious to the casuals.
Right.
For sure.
Right. I mean, cause you know, the amount of money that these films rack up suggests that there are a lot of people watching them that are right, not diving into
as nerdy as us.
Right, right. But what do you think that comment from Kevin means in terms of the duration of phase four? How much longer do you think we have before we enter phase five?
Oh, you mean like when will he come out and technically clarify, hey, this is when phase five is starting?
Yeah, like, I think it's interesting looking back, you know, like, phase one was basically leading up to the Avengers, and then phase two was kind of the fallout of that largely, and then phase three was kind of the fallout of Age of Ultron, and then phase sure, four has been the fallout of Endgame, so it makes me wonder, do you think there's going to be some other kind of big pinnacle of phase four that then leads into a phase five, and do you think that's coming in the next year or two, or do you think we've still got several more years of phase four?
Ha, I see. Or will it be different for the first time ever with phase four not culminating in a huge event film, but maybe phase four was just laying the groundwork for phase five and he'll technically clarify? Yeah, I don't know. I don't think there's going to be a huge team-up film or a big event film in the next year or two, do you? We already know the slate for next year, and I don't think those films are the ones where we'll get a bunch of crossover.
Right. Yeah.
So maybe 2024?
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting, right? Because we've talked about how phase four is in a lot of ways like phase one, which I think in terms of years was probably the longest, and going 2008 to 2012. And then phase two would have been from 2013 to 15.
I wonder if phase five will just be the beginning of the connectedness then.
Yeah.
Because you can't wait for a team-up movie. If the team-up movie isn't until 2025, let's say, then you're claiming phase four is 6 years long at that point?
Yeah.
So I wonder if there will be something next year that will clearly point us in a direction. And we'll look back and be like, just like phase two was, that's kind of the beginning of that. Phase two was the fallout of Avengers for sure.
Right.
But it also was the beginning of the ramp up of the interconnectedness, right? Like that's when we got the Infinity Stones. That's when we saw the cosmic side of things better.
Right.
You know?
No, for sure. I think, man, the other thing that we have to remember is that because of COVID, phase four didn't actually begin by Marvel's definition until last year. So it feels like we've been in this mode for so long, right? Because
that's
we think
true.
Of like Far From Home as sort of being the post-Endgame. But I think that's why I'm kind of excited to see what those parameters are, because for so long, phase four has almost just been equivalent with the post-Endgame MCU. And so I think once we kind of know the timeline and the plan for the next phases, I think it's going to help us kind of start to see where we are structurally and sequentially. And that'll help, I think, because people are always debating this phase more than others, like the timeline of certain things. And I think that's in part because people are just trying to figure out like what the meta-narrative is. Yeah, right.
Yeah, exactly. That's crazy you bring that up, because I always forget that we had that shutdown. I don't forget about the shutdown. I forget that we had the shutdown just after Endgame.
Right.
Like, how wild is the timing there? They were already going to pause, right? But we just got a really extended pause. So it's actually been a long time. But content-wise, yeah, they took a two-year gap there kind of. So they didn't start putting things out. See, just to reiterate what you said, we've always kind of viewed Far From Home as the beginning of phase four and not the reflection or the epilogue of phase three, in which case then it started in July of that year. So then it has been 3 years or so.
Right, right.
Fascinating. Either way, if there was to be some kind of bigger event movie or some team up, I guess, you know what? Next year's films are team ups. They're just mini team ups.
Right.
And maybe it's more of that, like we've been talking about, because Ant-Man's going to have some kind of team up, I think, at least with the Wasp, but definitely Kang being a crossover there. That's interesting. The Marvels, obviously, at this point now is going to be a team up of a few of our characters. And Guardians, obviously, is its own thing, but a team up. So again, maybe it's continuing that mini team ups of the different genres kind of thing, or the different branches. We talked about that with the cosmic branch and the grounded branch, etc.
Which
maybe that's the end of phase four, the mini team ups.
That certainly makes more sense in terms of the slate that we have out there. I am really curious now to kind of come back full circle to see how Love and Thunder plays into this discussion. Because I think from the outside, it seems so separate from everything else that's been going
isolated.
On.
Isolated.
Yeah. Yeah. But historically, the main three, at least phase two onward, and you know, Iron Man 3 is sort of unique in that. But like if you look at Winter Soldier, Civil War, Thor the Dark World, Ragnarok.
Yeah, that's
like they did start doing a lot of that kind of connective work, right? And
then Infinity War and Endgame centered so much around Thor, at least Infinity War.
Right.
So he's often been the bringer of this connectedness. That is a really good point. And Robbie, this is fascinating to me, okay? Because I've been watching a lot of interviews with Chris Hemsworth and Taika.
Uh-huh.
Like, you know, Taika's so quirky and he's always joking around and stuff. So like every comment starts with a joke first. And he always jokes that he's the one that doesn't know all the MCU interconnectedness.
Hmm.
Now, I think he's mainly joking because he's clearly very connected with Disney at this point.
Right.
He's not only done these things, he also was in Free Guy. He's made some other appearances.
The Lightyear.
So like, right. He's not removed from Disney. So I do think he is invested and he's probably just joking. But that's interesting to think about, that the guy who's constantly joking about, well, I just come in and change it up and blow it up and I don't know about other interconnectedness, might have these films that sneaky, low-key end up being really important to the MCU. Like, as much as he jokes about that with Ragnarok, I mean, he still had Bruce as a major factor in the film. Right. And the final thing is what leads us directly into Infinity War. So you're right. I've been thinking of this film as being pretty standalone-ish. And by the way, if it turns out to be a Guardians 2 thing where it is totally isolated, I think I'll be kind of disappointed.
Mm.
And yet, it's very possible that it is connected in some way.
See, I think I would view this one a little bit differently there because
of the timing.
Right. Well, and because in the Guardians at that stage, we really associated with moving the cosmic ball forward. And whenever we had the first Guardians film, it was by far the most info we got about Thanos. And it really gave us way more info on the Infinity Stones. So I think, like you've always said, there is maybe an expectation. Like, I remember thinking Guardians 2 is going to be where they wind up on Earth somehow or something. And like that sort of connects everything. And so I think at that point, the momentum was such that it felt a little bit more like side questy, like we always say. But here, because there is the multiverse thing happening, but it's not so all encompassing. Like, you know, we've still gotten Black Widow and Hawkeye and now Ms. Marvel, which may or may not sort of bleed into Secret Wars, as we can talk about here in a bit. But so I think I wouldn't hold it against it quite as much. But just because Thor is such a central character, it would be a little strange for it to be like, okay, here's the mainline MCU all moving in this direction. And then like, here's a fun little Thor movie over here. Like, that would seem a little odd, I guess.
True. Well, speaking of interconnectedness, I want to get into this Ms. Marvel episode because I felt like this is the first time in this series that we started getting the ball rolling a little bit, where maybe some hints have been placed at some connectedness to some larger scale things.
Yeah.
Today's coverage of Ms. Marvel is brought to you by our friends at Squarespace. Robbie and I love Squarespace. We have built our friendsfromwork.com website using Squarespace exclusively from the beginning. If you are a small business, if you're an artist, a musician, and you're trying to start a website, Squarespace is the way to go because they have a ton of really handy tools for you. We personally love the analytics side of Squarespace and the commerce side. That's where we've sold all of our merchandise and we've tracked our inventory and our shipping. Squarespace Commerce easily syncs with third-party shipping programs, so you can import your shipping label directly from Squarespace's website. And that's not all. There's tons more beyond that, including templates, easy-to-design pages, and other amazing tools. So check out Squarespace if you're looking to build a website, and tell them we sent you by using our promo code FRIENDSFROMWORK to save 10% off your purchase of a website or domain. Today's episode of Ms. Marvel is also brought to you by our friends at Epic Hero Shop. You've heard us talk a lot about Epic Hero Shop, and that's because Robbie and I are both really excited about their products. If you're looking for some nerd merchandise, like we always are, and like we personally own, go to epicheroshop.com. They have Star Wars stuff, DC stuff, and more importantly for us, they have Marvel stuff. You can get things like Miss Marvel-themed stuff, Doctor Strange-themed stuff, Loki-themed stuff. This includes shirts, tank tops, hoodies, beanies, accessories. So check out all of the awesome stuff at epicheroshop.com and use our promo code FRIENDSFROMWORK.
All right, Kyle. Episode 3 of Ms. Marvel is titled Destined. It was directed again by Mira Menon, who directed the second episode of Ms. Marvel. And This one was written by Freddie Seiborn. I think I'm saying that correctly. Matthew Chauncey of What If fame. And also A.C. Bradley, the creator of the What If series and friend from work. She showed up on the show before. A.C.'s awesome, so it's fun to see her here. Just looking through, she will end up writing, in addition to this episode, two more before the end of this first season here. She'll write episode 4 and episode 6. So excited to see so much of AC showing up in a show that we love so much.
Love AC Bradley. I want to do a little bit of a throwback for today's episode. So let's dive into all the plot things first.
Mm-hmm.
And then towards the end, we can say our what worked and what didn't work. Classic rewatch style.
Perfect.
Partially, I want to do that because there were so many little plot things here. So first off, shout out to a couple of listeners who emailed this, but have you noticed the subtle Easter egg of the tech that Damage Control is using being very Stark-esque?
I have.
Are those drones specifically the Stark drones? It's possible. They look very, very similar. And then did you catch this today, Robbie? When Damage Control busts in at the end, it looks like they're shooting that sonic wave thing that Tony is using in Civil War against Wanda.
Mm.
And it's making the same Iron Man type sounds. Go back and watch it again. I watched it twice. It's making that like repulsor thing and then the sonic thing. And I just think that's really cool.
I need to go back and
because
watch it.
Because Damage Control was started by Tony. It makes sense they would have his tech. And I think it's an interesting storyline beyond just being an Easter egg that as they've taken over this tech because it's not okay for other people to use, that they're then using it.
Right.
And that's like the beginning of something even more interesting, I think. So just shout out to the people who pointed out the drones and then here in this episode with this new tech.
No, that's a great... That does make sense, and I feel like it makes just the whole role of Damage Control here, I think, is a really nice follow-up on a part of No Way Home that I always get the sense was maybe trimmed down a tad. I actually think that is true because another announcement that we had that we didn't cover is that they're re-releasing Spider-Man No Way Home in theaters with some extra footage, and I think I saw that one of the extended scenes is from the Damage Control stuff, so... I like that we've kind of gotten some more context there, not just with the one character that we met, but also with kind of what their role is in a post-Tony Stark world.
All right, so besides that Easter egg, we have a lot to unpack here, Robbie. We start by flashing back to 1942, and it appears Aisha, who is this famed grandmother, is looking for this same bongle that Kamala has. But first thing I noticed is when they find it, are they peeling it off a blue arm?
Yes.
Is that a Kree arm?
I think it is a Kree arm.
Wow.
And I think that that sort of cements that the bangle and you know, maybe this also connects with what's going on with Shang-Chi, but the bangle, at least, I think, is some version of a Negaband, which is one of these kind of ancient artifacts that shows up in the Marvel comics on the cosmic side.
So hints at interconnectedness one. By the way, did I say bongle or bangle? Is it bangle?
I think it's bangle. Bangle. Yeah. But
did I say bongle?
I like it. I like the back. I never know what's going to come out.
I'm sorry if I got it wrong. I think it's bangle.
I think it will be really interesting to track this, though, because, I mean, that's such a perfect way to connect Ms. Marvel with Captain Marvel, because that's Carol's character and origin is so tied to the Kree. And that is, again, like in the comics, like we've talked about with her being an Inhuman, Inhumans are tied to Kree. So the connection is kind of there. So I think this is another really interesting way for them to dig in, not just to the family history side that we said we love so much, but also to figure out a way to make it make sense that they would wind up needing to work together for some reason, or at least
okay,
having some kind of commonality.
I think I caught an Easter egg that you didn't. Here we go.
Oh, wow.
In that exact same scene, though, as the camera zooms out and you kind of get a view from the top of the cave.
Oh, I know what you're going to say.
Oh, you got it. There's the Ten Rings logo in that cave.
Yeah.
Okay. So before I caught that, I had already written in my notes, is there a connection to the Eternals at all with this other dimension talk? So I'm just looking at this and I'm thinking, we have Kree. We have this talk of other beings that are kind of like ghosts from another dimension. We have a Ten Rings logo. We have these bangles. Here we go. Speculation Central.
Warning, 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 warning.
Am I reaching too far to find connectedness in all this? I'm thinking about how Captain Marvel is also in the post-credit scene of Shang-Chi.
Right, right.
Again, just some of the artifacts looking similar to Eternals and how these beings now in Ms. Marvel don't age. Is there some kind of speculation precedent for connectedness of these artifacts? Or could that be something that the MCU is choosing just to set up?
I mean, yeah, that's a great question. There's obviously some connection with Shang-Chi. I mean, the Ten Rings placement mixed with what we got in that post-credit scene, I think. The interesting thing to me, though, is in that scene, she makes a point to say it's not like any alien tech I've ever seen, which, you know, if you needed to right. do some no-prizing, you could say, well, maybe it's ancient Kree tech. But I think that's an interesting line for them to give Carol, given that she knows so much about Kree, for her to Good say point. That and it specifically be Kree technology.
Good point. Are the Eternals tied to this at all in your mind?
I don't.
Or is that
I don't
the
think
reach?
So. I don't. Okay. That feels like the. I mean, I think in some ways Eternals could be tied to anything in the Marvel universe that kind of goes back through history because they were sort of always around. Like, I know that.
Yeah.
I think at some point, wasn't there talk about a cameo of an Eternal in Moon Knight even? So well, I
and
think
the,
that.
And the shout out to Kingo in this, in episode 2, she mentions Kingo by name, which maybe she's thinking Kingo the Bollywood actor. Think about that. Maybe she doesn't even know Kingo is an Eternal.
Yeah.
She may just be, again, because he's making those films.
Right.
But
so, we totally forgot to bring that up in episode 2, but you're right.
I know. So like, I'm just saying like, it could be totally nothing, but there's been a lot of little things. But like, let me just list some of these. Like the artifacts look similar. Agreed? They mm-hmm. at least have a similar vibe. There's a shout out to Kingo. This is dumb stuff, right? But like the artifact that they left behind is a knife in Eternals. And then here they're kind of using a similar looking ancient knife to like, they find that in the rubble there. They talk about these beings from another dimension. They don't age. They also talk about how, like, they reference humanity. Did you catch that? They say, like, you loved humanity. They say something like that.
Yeah.
That feels so Eternal-like. All this could be a stretch, but I just wonder if they're involved at all, or maybe it totally was an isolated film and I'm just, you know, off my rocker here.
No,
I think there's something with Shang-Chi and Captain Marvel, obviously. I'm wondering if Eternals involved. Who knows? Anyways.
I do think, and we can get into this more as the show progresses, but the Negaband thing is really clever because in the comics, the Negabands do allow you to do a lot of what we've seen Ms. Marvel be able to do power-wise. But then, you know, us learning that it has to interact with who she is, like we talked about before, so that it makes it not just her using the bands, but it being a power that she has the ability to employ, I think is really smart. I think that the other interesting thing about it being the Negabands, if that is in fact where we're heading, is that that means that they could potentially have originated in the negative zone, which is a whole different thing as we're getting into dimensions and is very kind of Fantastic Four-centric. But also deals with a lot of the like wilder, not like space cosmic, but like mind bendy cosmic stuff that Marvel likes to do back when writers were doing a lot of acid.
Right.
And so I think we can maybe see some beginnings, like to go back to Kevin's comment about not just the Secret Wars side of like a lot of different universes and incursions, but maybe just more opening up of these like cosmic artifacts as a whole, because that like that is a part of the Marvel Comics mythology, and it's changed some during different eras. But it makes me wonder, like, even if the Shang-Chi rings aren't of Kree origin, maybe those are just also these like ancient kind of cosmically powered artifacts as well. And there's something there. I think my only hesitation is I don't want us to get into like a knockoff Infinity Stone situation where like we've got just another set of MacGuffins out there. But I do think it's interesting if we start seeing more things like that, it may be yet another path that we're heading down.
So besides just the artifacts, though, when they talk about them being from another dimension, do you basically hear alternate reality? Like, are those words interchangeable? Are they from a different universe? Like, if this was 616, which, as Kamala would say, it's not. If it was, okay, let's say the MCU is 616. Are they referencing they're from 427?
Yeah.
Or is dimension not interchangeable here? Is dimension more like what Shang-Chi goes to with Tao Lo? On Earth, but in a different dimension on Earth?
That's that's my read.
So it's not a named universe with a whole new Earth and all that?
Yeah, like I think my understanding of this, and we just don't have enough information to know for sure. We can speculate, but like I think we maybe talked about this a little bit in the context of the post-credit scene for Doctor Strange, where we have Clea telling him that they need to go to the dark dimension because he's caused an incursion. And I was wondering after that, okay, so are we going to another universe's dark dimension, option A? Are we going to our universe's dark dimension, option B? Or option C, is the dark dimension its own whole numbered universe that's separate, kind of like what you're saying? And I think there I landed ultimately on option B, and I think that's because my view right now is that you have a universe that encompasses all of the dimensions within it. So like I think that theoretically there is a different like pocket universe from with like Talao in like the what was it, 838 or something universe that Steven goes to. You know what I'm saying? Like I think that each numbered universe would have its own set of dimensions like that. Like I think there would be like maybe an infinite number of Dormammus, but maybe not. Maybe there's just one Dormammu that moves through different numbered universes. You know, like I'm just not sure how they're conceiving of this.
Well, and then how does Loki fit into this with Eliath, who consumes timelines? Again, this comes back to a worry I've had. I've had this for 3 years. Our listeners know that. But who is the ultimate voice in charge of all this? It should be Kevin, right? So let me get to a point here. I'm concerned that we have not defined timelines, realities, alternate realities, dimensions, universes. Is there a Marvel hierarchy of this is what this means? Here is why Loki's timeline talk is different or the same. Just has anyone actually defined that? And I think to myself, well, just trust Kevin. He's got this all figured out. But then Kevin comes out and says the MCU is Universe 616. Then Iman Vellani comes out and says, no, it's not, and here's why not. And I think I side with Iman. That doesn't make sense. Like, if the comics universe is 616, then as Iman would say, why is not everything from the comics the same here? Then why are there not X-Men with the mutant gene? And why are the Eternals all different than we saw in the comics? And like, it doesn't make sense. So why even come out and say it is the same? No one would be offended if you said it's actually Universe 222. Nobody would care.
Right.
It would just be that's the MCU version. So why come out and say that? So I'm with Iman on that. So my point is, does even Kevin fully know the difference between these dimensions, universes, realities, timelines.
Yeah, I mean,
that's
my concern. Yeah, no, that my defense, I guess, would be it's so early, and I would almost rather these characters all be using different terminology than it be like weirdly similar.
They all know exactly what it is. Yeah, that's true. Right. That's true. If they all knew exactly the sci-fi behind it, I'd be like, okay, what?
Right. So I am curious. Like, I would like to think that somebody has some sense of what the universe building is here.
I need to also add then that it is very strange that Mysterio, in that key scene, when we thought it was all a fake out, says, your universe is, and what does he say? He gives it a number. Golly.
616.
He does say 616. So yeah. How does he know that if he actually was just faking it? Like, yeah. How are they all on the same page about this?
Iman talked about that as well. I've given it some thought. I think there's a way that if Marvel wanted to walk that back, that they could do so.
But, well, you could just say that Mysterio didn't know. He was making that all up. But holy lucky guess.
Or hey, maybe, look, we know that Christine was the one out cataloging numbers and naming them. Maybe she came to the main MCU timeline in some way to catalog it, or had some way of however they observe if they
right,
can't
they
actually
have some
travel.
Way of knowing. That's true. That's true.
Then maybe she was.
And told
she,
Quentin Beck?
Well, or she like saw the like S.H.I.E.L.D.-esque files. I know S.H.I.E.L.D. isn't S.H.I.E.L.D. anymore, you know, where Nick Fury was clearly trusting, or Talos is Nick Fury, jeez, was clearly trusting.
Holy Quentin stretch.
Beck. So, hey, man, look, we've got to do the work. We got to do the work, all right?
So anyways, moving off the dimension thing, it will be interesting to get more follow-up there, partially because that's actually going to be one of my critiques later, is just how fast they go from being friendly to now they're the villain. And it's interesting that when they bring up the dimension, they also say Kamala's grandmother was also trying to find that. So
right.
I don't know now where Kamala's grandmother stands on the side of kill everyone or not. You know
right.
what I'm saying?
Right, right.
So is she a good figure or a bad figure in this story? We'll have to figure that out. That's why I need more context. I need more background still. And we'll get it. Because I think the train hints at some things with Nani.
Yeah.
Yeah, we'll get it. There's just a lot. There's a lot going on here all of a sudden. The first two episodes really were just kind of setting the groundwork. And there was a lot of you and I just reviewing them because we were like, oh my gosh, we love this. But there wasn't a ton to break down. This right. feels like the first time where I'm like, oh my gosh, like there's a lot to discuss here.
I did want to say, as we're kind of talking through some Easter eggs, I loved the Dr. Selvig connection
yes,
that we got a couple times.
Yes, a paper by Dr. Selvig, yes.
Because he was the first one doing, like I was recently rewatching some of the Thor stuff ahead of Love and Thunder, and that post-credit scene, which Joss Whedon directed, and we found this out in doing all of our post-credit scene research for an episode that we did on Friends from Work Plus, Selvig says something about, oh, you know, the implications, a gateway to another dimension, it's unprecedented, right? It'll be interesting to see how that stuff kind of gets defined, because that scene made me think even way back then, I was like, yeah, but is that what the Tesseract does? Like when Loki comes in, is he coming from another dimension or is he just coming from a different place in space? Because they make it seem more like the second one. So
right,
anyway,
but they even talk about that in Dark World, though, with the convergence.
Right,
but also
right.
it seems like Jane is sending those body parts to other, again, dimensions there as well. So I do in general like that Selvig has made a lot of I do like that Selvig has gotten a lot of Easter eggs at this point. Uh-huh. I would not be surprised if we hear his name again tomorrow when we see Thor, Love, and Thunder.
Maybe he's the one that's reference. Going to lay out this whole theory of the universe / multiverse for us.
All jokes aside, I don't hate the idea that he's a non-superpowered individual who's just been a really genius scientist behind the scenes all the time. Like,
oh,
that
yeah.
makes sense to me. And so I kind of like that he keeps making appearances.
He was on the ground floor.
And writing books and stuff. Right.
Which didn't, Selvig actually showed up because he was in Age of Ultron and went to the Norn pool with Thor. But in that brief bit we get at the end of Age of Ultron where they introduce the new Avengers compound, Selvig is in that. Like, we see him with, like, a team of researchers walking around. So I think the idea is that he's been, was at some point integrated with the Avengers, working with them. And so who knows what happened with the snap and all that. But I think they could easily, I mean, given the fact that they brought Darcy back, easily keep Selvig in the game.
Yeah. Okay, so what's with the Inception-esque train? What's your early prediction? Why does that train have significance? And by the way, how is Hernani also seeing the same train, the same vision? Does Hernani have a bangle?
Yeah. Oh, maybe because they talked about needing two, but they only got one. But maybe they only
have one.
Did wind up with two, and that's
maybe she's
be a
wearing one.
Yeah.
Yes.
Obviously it triggered the memory of the conversation from episode two, where they talk about the train and in the midst of the partition and all that. But
see, I think there's going to be some importance where, like, that was a pivotal scene where they've always thought that their grandmother did the wrong thing, but we're now going to find out that her grandmother was saving the world by separating the bangles. Right. Or something else.
Oh, interesting.
Else.
Yeah.
No, like she put one on the train and then she stayed back with one, or I don't know.
I do think it'll be a pivotal retelling in that way, because they've set up so much how kind of shamed she was. And I think that they're going to redeem her and kind of rewrite history in that way. I'm more curious as to why and how Kamala is seeing the train come through. Like, at that moment, like, is that a vision of the past? How does that interact with her powers? Is that something she's seeing through, like, another dimension? Or is that just this sort of, like, vision related to her own kind of history and heritage?
And why does the bangle pick right then to play it?
Right, right.
There's a lot to chew on here.
So one other plot thing that we didn't really dig into in those first few episodes when we were talking about damage control, do you think that we have some Skrulls on our hands with these damage control agents?
So that's fascinating. Yes, possibly. And that brings up a whole new discussion that we've been dancing around a little bit here.
Mm-hmm.
Again, we know the Skrulls from the comics, what that looks like, and we know the Skrulls from Captain Marvel. We know that they're around. It's possible that some came back to Earth. It's possible that some stayed on Earth. Typically, though, the ones that we saw had pretty good intentions, not bad mm-hmm. intentions. How does that play into the MCU then? Like, why would Skrulls want to stop other superpowered beings? Are the Skrulls just sit-ins for Nick Fury while he's gone? And he told them, like, hey, if anyone's superpowered, let me know. Also, if they've been here for 30 years, how does that play into this kind of thing since the 90s?
Unless they haven't been, you know, I mean, because I think it, I mean, yeah, it depends. They can do anything they want in terms of what we maybe saw off screen. But I think that we saw all the Skrulls leave with Carol at the end of Captain Marvel. Or that was the implication. Of course, we can now find out that somebody stayed behind. But I don't think that we were supposed to think that Nick, as he was kind of getting the Avengers initiative going, had the help of some Skrull sleeper agents that were left back, at least not that he knew of. So I feel like they either hid back in some kind of nefarious way that doesn't really fit with what we know about that group of Skrulls, or
unlikely, yes.
This is a whole new group that came in maybe during the blip or, you know, some other time back in the more recent MCU history.
And that would give them a chance to set up a more infamous version of these Skrulls, right? Like, maybe this is a rogue group that came back.
Right.
And has actually got bad plans, hence allowing us to do Secret Invasion a little more like the comics.
Mm-hmm.
And then maybe Talos would be like, oh my gosh, it's a rogue group. We got to stop them. And there's like a civil war amongst the Skrulls, potentially.
Yeah. I mean, I think is starting to make more sense to me. I think the reason I mean, she's clearly, so the character I'm really focusing on right here is Agent Deaver. And she's clearly acting pretty strange, right? I mean, like pretty intensely in a way that doesn't really seem to have a particular rationale other than maybe, I mean, I know that there's supposed to be the element of them like lumping in all of these different mosques with Nightlight and therefore kind of going through and.
But even that, when did we join a world where damage control's job was to stop all superpowered individuals? I'm with you. It's kind of weird. Like, I don't know if that is a normal rationale because we haven't seen that. There hasn't been a crackdown on all superpowered people. I guess maybe you could say the Accords, but even that wasn't a crackdown. Like when Spider-Man saves somebody, all Nightlight has done is helped a kid from falling off a building. That's it.
Right. Right.
So if you have no other agenda, you wouldn't be searching that aggressively for her, right? Like why bring her in, as he says?
And unless, you know, this winds up informing more of what was going on in No Way Home, and that wasn't just a misunderstanding, but maybe, I mean, so, okay, let's think about this briefly. We know that in WandaVision, a Skrull or somebody that winds up being a Skrull approaches Monica Rambeau and says that, you know, you're wanted by an old friend and then points up. And so either Fury or Carol, I think Fury, based on the Far From Home credit scene, has maybe sent some Skrulls down. And so did some of those maybe fracture off, like you're saying, and then he left them in positions of power, but they're maybe, they're going rogue or abusing that.
But even there, they were so friendly and doing the work of Fury.
Right, but maybe this is a different, they were sent down for similar reasons to kind of help keep tabs, but they have ulterior motives. Like don't you think it was interesting that he makes the comment in No Way Home, like, oh, Fury's been off world for a year. Like, why would anybody know that? Like, even in the government, like, isn't Fury's whole thing that he plays everything super close to the chest? Right.
Fair point.
You know?
To which Spider-Man says he has? What?
Right. Like, what's the point of even having Talos pose as you if people just in the government randomly know that you're not actually there?
Fair point. That's an excellent point. Yeah, maybe those two damage control people are rogue Skrulls. I'm processing right now. I think that's possible.
I think I would like that. I think it's about time that we're ramping up in that way. Wow. Well, that'll be interesting to see.
It's either that or they're ramping up to more of the political side of it, like we've talked about so many times, right? Like that damage control is becoming a branch of, again, I'm just going to use this as an example, some branch of like a Norman Osborn empire that wants to shut down superheroed individuals, and they're slowly transitioning to that. And maybe that will eventually play with the X-Men or I don't know what. Maybe that's what we're going towards, or we're going towards a secret invasion and they are Skrulls.
Well, I think it could be both, honestly, because I think one of the things that Bendis did really well, and, you know, I've talked about how Secret Invasion was not so much just the 8-issue event itself, but all the lead up to it, and how he winds up making the involvement of the Skrulls kind of a crucial element of all of these other big, like, 2000s events, from, like, House of M to Civil War, to then kind of the aftermath of that leading to the Dark Avengers with Norman Osborn. And so I wonder, like, I mean, for instance, Contessa, that Julia Louis-Dreyfus plays, is another character that does not have to be a Skrull by any means, because it is a legitimate character in her own right, but it is a character that was replaced by a Skrull in Secret Invasion. So, like, as you're looking through, it could be, like, one leads to the other. Like, we have the secret invasion that sort of spurs a general distrust of superheroed folks. Like, they're working behind the scenes to make that happen. We have ulterior motives that we still don't really understand driving her to assemble like John Walker, and arguably that could tie into Sharon acting so strangely, but maybe not. Like maybe the side of this that we've kind of deemed the more like political storyline moving forward in phase four is not a different one from Segan Invasion, but maybe they're interlaced or even overlaid.
Yeah. Another good point.
I bet we're going to get some answers one way or the other by the end of Ms. Marvel.
Oh, really? That soon?
Not like definitive, but I think as to maybe at least like a suggestion as to whether these folks are Skrulls, like something that we can kind of run with one way or the other. I hope that we do.
Sure.
But, you know, we'll see.
That's about all the questions I had, but I have so much more on the what worked and what doesn't work front that I want to get into after a quick word from these sponsors. All right, so I would like to just say a few things that I thought worked, and mm-hmm. you tell me if you agree, disagree, or if I'm missing anything, okay?
Let's do it.
The texting animations are still so cool. The visualizations of what's going on her phone or in her head, just so cool. When she's looking at the computer and on the wall is the haha or the question mark. Again, I've brought this up. It's been a thing in film where directors didn't know what to do with phone texts and how to show those to the audience. I think this is maybe the coolest I've ever seen it.
Yeah, I think I totally agree. And I noticed the one this time coming off of the poster on the wall.
I know you and Candace mentioned that in the comics, you got a slightly different version of Bruno than we get here. Someone with a little more swag, but I'm really enjoying this version of Bruno. Have you grown to love him at all anymore? Like, I really like the way he protects Kamala and his dynamic and the way he rolls his eyes at the other guys. And he's got it really bad for Kamala, clearly.
Right.
And I wonder if she realizes that question mark. So that could be a fun dynamic. Have you come around on Bruno at all or not?
So I should say I like Bruno here. And I think that Matt Luntz is doing a great job. I think I still like the comics version better in that he just has a more unique vibe, I think. Like Bruno in the series reminds me a lot of kind of early Tom Holland, Peter Parker. And which is great. I mean, I love that character, but I think I like him being a little bit more laid back and not like so neurotic like he is in the show, which I think is endearing.
Okay.
But yeah, I'm curious to see how that plays out as he sticks around for longer. But I think it's just one of the more interesting, very minor character departures. Cause I think ultimately he does still play a similar role. Like in the comics, he's still kind of protective of Kamala, just sort of manifests in a different way.
I think that's totally fair. It's just one of those things where, because I have no expectations for the character ahead of time, didn't even know who he was, I've enjoyed what I've seen just via the MCU.
Right. Very fair.
Also, you laughed out loud. There's no way you didn't. When he does the whole other dimension thing, and then she says, "Can you explain it to me like someone who has a social life?" What a good comeback.
I did think that was funny. The moment that actually made me laugh harder was the little moment in the kitchen when she's like, "All right, everybody get out," and then just ignore her and keep going. And then
yeah, I laughed too.
Start coming in, and the one cook is like, "Absolutely not. Nope.
Absolutely not." That's something totally Annika and I would do. No, thank you. Absolutely not. And just, I'm out. I'm not a part of this. And it's kind of funny in a weird, like, way overanalyzing it way. It's kind of meta where the people now in the MCU have seen this kind of stuff so much where it's like,
right.
No, absolutely not. I'm not a part of this. I just want to do my job. Okay, you laughed at Brown Jovi, right? Please.
Oh, yep. I'm glad you
brought
that
up. I mean, that's unbelievable.
Fantastic.
So good. And we got the Bon Jovi I was asking for. So fun, I thought. Holy cow.
True. Yeah, you're right. I forgot you had called that out.
I said we would 100% get Bon Jovi. And here we did.
Yep.
I thought that was really fun. I think the MCU's use of pop music is a win here again. Not only the cultural stuff, but stuff like Bon Jovi, I think, really fits. I'll just take this chance to bash Captain Marvel one more time and say the only time it's never, the only time it hasn't worked in the MCU was I'm Just a Girl. And then I still think her powers are visualized so cool. Like they put their budget into the powers and you totally get chills when she embiggens her fist for the first time. Come on. That was cool.
For sure.
The family dynamic, I think, is still excellent. I feel her parents' concern at the end, and yet her pain when she can't tell them what's going on, like in this scene.
Oh, Kamala, thank God. Where have you been? Did you pull the alarm? Who were those people you were with? They were arrested.
Can you tell us what exactly happened?
Kamala, please, just be honest with us. You're our daughter. We want to help you. But we can't if we don't know what's going on with you.
Just, I can't. Okay.
Not just that scene, though, but also when Kamala is getting her knee cleaned up by her mother. And I saw AC Bradley tweet about this moment that she based this off her dad as an immigrant coming into the country and how hard an immigrant has to work to give their kids a better life.
Mm-hmm.
What a special moment. Yeah. And what a cool dynamic to me. So the family stuff is still really working. I felt the brother's disappointment in how the wedding went down. Like I shouldn't really care that much that his wedding was ruined, but I was bothered that he didn't get a normal wedding. Because of this interfering?
Right.
It's again one of those things where I'm just emotionally connected to pretty low stakes. Just the disappointment in the family still moves me.
Right. Which for me was informed in large part by the conversation that we got with her dad and brother, which I thought was just,
oh,
it was
what
a small
cool
moment. But yeah, but a great moment. Just about being scared and not having money and his dad just sort of joking about it and brushing it off and... It, just this, like, it's okay to not have everything together is so opposite from what you often get in these sorts of scenes.
Right.
And so, I thought that was really, like, every little bit that we got with the family this episode, I thought was really powerful and really well done.
The family wholesomeness is so good, and it's something we all need, and I love that the show is just embracing that. Because we've talked so much about how typically these characters come from horrible upbringings or one of the parents died or they're divorced or they don't know their parents. And I do think it's unique and fresh to just have a wholesome religious family. And for a second, I actually thought Kamala at the end was actually going to tell them what's going on. I really did think that because I thought that would have been a cool opportunity for the showmakers to subvert the family dynamic even more. Her not telling is kind of the typical here. I feel like after all that of being like, hey, your family is here for you. That's what makes us different is we have our family to lean on, all that she was just going to tell them. So maybe that was a missed opportunity there.
I'm curious to see how they utilize it. You know, in the comics that's used to great effect as by the time she's finally ready to tell them and does tell them, her mom's already figured it out. You know, so I think that it's, there are ways that they can utilize that to make it still different and still kind of show the unique kind of bond and relationship that they have. But yeah, I'm with you. I mean, I was thinking the same thing, but I also love that. Like, I love that scene could have gone either way and I really didn't know how it was going to turn out. And you can actually see the debate going on kind of on her face, which is just another testament to Iman's acting. But also, I mean, I think to the writing as well, not just for this episode, but for the last three that you get to that point and it's like, Yeah, I don't know. I could see her going either way on this. Like, this isn't one of those things where it's, like, so screamingly obvious that she should just tell her family and then all this would go away. I know you hate miscommunication-driven issues in shows. I don't feel like this is that level, but at the same time, it's enough to where it's like, well, you know, like, they have shown a certain level of patience and understanding even when you've abused that trust. So it is getting to a point where, yeah, like, you would probably be better served to just explaining this sort of crazy circumstance you found yourself in.
Hopefully next episode. It's kind of a unique circumstance for her because I'm sure she's wondering how much of this is just the bangle versus her. And so if her parents say, give it up then, maybe she doesn't want to, or maybe she does want to now and doesn't know if she should. Like, there's a different right. dynamic with the power coming from a bracelet kind of thing.
Well, and with the bangle being this family heirloom that is sort of fraught and controversial within the family, I'm sure that's there's a whole nother layer to that, you know, where would that make her mom even angrier than she would be just because she's been keeping this mega secret from her, that it's like all this stuff delving into her own family history and she hasn't told her and hasn't involved her and did it all sort of unilaterally. So I hope to kind of see them explain. It feels to me like an episode 5 or episode 6 moment, but I do feel like we'll get something like that by the end of this first season.
Spider-Man Homecoming ends with Aunt May walking in on him and seeing that he's Spider-Man, and that's a fun cliffhanger. I kind of hope here it doesn't follow the exact same path. I would like to have her talk to her mom about that before the very last minute so I can see what their family thinks of her now as a superhero. I want a little time with that part of it. Is there anything else that you liked that I missed?
You called out a lot of the humor moments that I thought worked. I'm sure I'm going to be missing some. So I don't want to miss that we finally got the big quote, good is not a thing you are, it's a thing you do.
Oh, yes, I had that written down. I forgot to bring that up. Shoot.
Which is, you know, like we said on the Comics Corner episode, that's sort of Kamala's with great power moment. In general, I think it's fascinating how unique this character is in terms of modern Marvel Comics creations, that she does have a moment that is kind of on par with with great power comes great responsibility moment. Not in terms of general pop culture awareness, obviously, because that's one of the most famous phrases in all of pop culture. But just looking at how recent this character is and thinking, you know, most of the big characters in Marvel Comics and the MCU have been around in some form or another for decades at this point. In most cases, many decades. You know, if you're looking at the original six Avengers in the MCU, they've all been around since the 60s. We've had new incarnations of characters like Jane Foster Thor and Miles Morales Spider-Man, and we've had other new characters show up and join teams of Avengers and the X-Men, etc. But I think that it's worth highlighting, just for people that maybe aren't that familiar, how successful this character has been for having been around relatively recently to the point where she has iconic moments within her lore. You know, and talking about comics from less than 10 years ago. I love that. I love how that's been adapted consistently, like we've said, and then down to this exact moment, which I think was pulled off pretty perfectly, in my opinion.
Oh, and one last thing I totally forgot. I am loving, through 3 episodes, the lack of the side mission story thing I always talk about. I think I want to point out specifically this show and Moon Knight for kind of bucking that trend, if one was forming on Disney Plus. I just felt like in Moon Knight, there was almost no wasted time. Not one part of the story did it feel like you took me out of the main story and told me a side story. And I feel the same here. I feel like this is right. All ramping up towards one cohesive story. And the wedding doesn't feel like a side chapter to that. It just feels like the next logical step. I always kind of say, like, contrast that to The Mandalorian, where the story is you need to get Grogu back to his home. And while you're trying to get back to your home, oh, your ship breaks down on this planet and you have to defend these people that have nothing to do with the story other than if you defend them, they'll give you whatever it was, you know, parts for your ship to then leave. And that has no real bearing on the main overarching plot that I care about, if that makes sense. That's what I think this show and Moon Knight are not doing.
Agreed. That's a good point. I think that that cuts both ways in some ways, not the lack of a side quest, but I think there are things that I like and don't like about the pace at which the show is moving, and that might transition us into the what doesn't work category.
Okay, what doesn't work, and you start.
Well, so on the one hand, I do like that the table is set a little bit earlier than it normally is. Like, I feel like in some ways, this episode 3, you know, to the extent that these series have been following the 6-episode formula since WandaVision,
this would be number 4.
This would feel more like an episode 4. Yeah. And maybe in part because they skipped the episode that you're thinking of, or cut out sections of what would normally be in like the 2nd episode. And so I like that because it makes me feel like, okay, now we've still got half the show to kind of deal with all of these pieces and unpack the things there, instead of like sometimes we're still at this point and we're like, there are a ton of characters that we know, or at least some characters that we know are supposed to show up here that we haven't even seen on screen yet. And so I do like that. However, I just feel like the first 2 episodes felt pacing-wise, stakes-wise, just perfect to me, which is why I gave both of them let's freaking goes. And this one, it just felt like things ramped up a little aggressively, got like a little fantastical quickly. Like, it went from, I mean, yes, she had the bangle, and of course we're in superhero world, so everything's always kind of fantastical. But I mean, the way that we immediately launch into like Jen / maybe beings from another dimension that are like aliens, and then dealing with the connective parts of that, I think, are interesting. Like, so I like what we were saying with the 10 rings and the Kree arm. Like, that stuff I think is all great. It just feels like part of it is the story, but I think maybe a bigger part of it even is just how quickly we get the turn from, oh, look, these are friends, you know, that can kind of help you navigate this new power and world that you're a part of, to, okay, now they're hell-bent on killing you, if that's what they have to do, and are like coming at you with this ferocity where it just is like, wow, okay, this, it's the first time I was pulled out of the vibe that I was loving so much from those first 2 episodes.
Okay, so I massively agree. And I love that you use the example of being pulled out of it, because more than what doesn't work, it's that. It's times that I feel like I was taken out of the story. I really, really agree on these friends that then turn from that to I want to kill you. I thought it was not only rushed in the storytelling, I actually think it was rushed in MCU time as well. Like, they wanted her help, and then the mother says, well, I've given Kamala a chance. Wait, really? It's been like 6 hours.
Right.
Like, you've been here for a long time, apparently. You can't wait 10 more hours? Like, all of a sudden now it's like, well, that's it. I got to kill everybody now. You maybe have waited here 100 years, and 6 hours is the deal breaker.
That's a great point.
I also think, like, I just don't even understand their motivation. I know they want to go home. Why can't they wait for Kamala to help escort them home? Like, why does home have to happen right now? Are they dying? And Do they know how to get home if they kill Kamala and get her bangle? Or does Kamala have to do it anyways? It just all felt like kind of out of place. And that makes me wonder, I almost wonder, and I don't know if this in particular would actually be successful. I don't know if this would work. But it almost makes you feel like you could have made the entire season one of Ms. Marvel just be about her realizing she has powers. And this could be like a season two thing where you dive into, oh, it actually has more meaning than just. Now, some people might think that that's too slow of a season one. Like if not much else happens, then maybe it's too slow. But I guess I wasn't looking for a ton of action, like fast-paced action from this kind of show anyways, I guess. Yeah. And that's kind of one of the things I've always praised the Spider-Man trilogy for, is that it was paced so well. We did let Peter stay really young, and it took him three full movies to grow, you know?
Right. No, which is, I think a huge part of that, by the way, is how perfectly tailored the Vulture was to his stage in his hero career, right? Like it was high stakes in that they were going to flood the black market with some of this Avengers tech, but it wasn't like he was trying to destroy the city or that he was some kind of like magical or even superpowered being. Like it felt like something that was appropriate, just out of Peter's league, right? Which is what Homecoming was supposed to be doing. And I'm not saying they had to copy that at all, because we're always saying, you know, find new paths to tread. But it does feel like it went from this grounded, like we talked so much about how great that scene was of her saving the boy falling from the minaret. And it just feels like a big leap. Like this feels more like maybe closer to where I thought we would have landed, at least towards the tail end of the show. And I should clarify, whenever I say stakes, I know people are thinking like, well, the stakes weren't, it's not like they were trying to blow everything up. They were just trying to take Kamala out. But what I mean more by that is just it got so fantasy feeling and or like borderline to me, kind of, it felt a little silly at times how like evil and bad guy these people turned so quickly. And it just felt like that's what I mean with amping it up. Like not necessarily talking about the level of the consequences, but talking about the kind of threats, like the nature of the threats that she's dealing with. Just it felt a little bit out of whack with what we had been getting. And part of that in terms of what doesn't work for
especially the guy that's like maniacally laughing, like, where are you going to go? Where are you going to go? It's like, whoa, you were just so funny 2 seconds ago.
Right. And part of that, and I don't know if this is coming from the directing or the writing or, you know, what happened behind the scenes, but we have praised so much just consistently all the way through on this show. And one thing that we pointed out with this and Moon Knight is that there just weren't really any performances that stood out as off. And really all of the Jen actors to me have had little moments that pulled me out of it where those performances just aren't on par with the rest of the cast, in my opinion. And so that probably feeds into some of this perspective, at least for me.
I agree again. And that's not just trying to agree with you for agreeing sake. I'm just going to be totally honest with you. It's a little bit of a bummer because I think we both thought that this could be a contender for most consistent Disney Plus show. I don't think the series is ruined at all, But this is a little bit of a downturn in some of those departments to where now my head, I don't know that I could place it ahead of WandaVision or Moon Knight for me, depending on
Right.
You know, a few things still, but it's just a bummer because it had been so consistent through those first two. And that's all we had seen for 3 weeks.
Right.
But yeah, I definitely think they could still go back and give us more backstory on the Djinn. And I think that will help. And I will say on a positive side of things, I actually thought how they handled Kamala dealing with the situation was perfect. Like, it's not like she all of a sudden became some incredible fighter. It's like she still doesn't really know her powers, and it's almost like her powers were blocking the punches for her without her even trying to do it. I appreciate that a lot. And like I said, when she did the Mbigan fist, I thought it was so cool because it was also like, oh my gosh, I don't know how I'm doing this. I thought that was handled amazingly well, to be honest.
I agree.
And honestly, at the end, Damage Control had to come in and save her in a way, so it wasn't even her stopping it yet. So that progression felt very natural.
And that leaves the story in a place where I'm interested to come back, which is fun. Like, I want to see the interaction with Damage Control and these immediately evil alternate dimension beings.
The final thing I wanted to point out is just that the lighting was off on a few scenes, and that was a disappointment as a step down. There's a set where she is sitting outside on her porch, and that's when she's actually told the good is not a thing you are, it's a thing you do, which is an amazing line, but the whole thing looked so off. And it almost was intentional. I think they're maybe trying to make it feel like it looks in a comic book film, but that's a bummer to me because I felt like some of the rooftop stuff from the previous episodes felt so realistic. And then this was like, oh gosh, we're like literally inside a built set. Even the shadows didn't look like shadows a real sun would create. And that must be a cinematography thing. I just don't know why. I don't know why they can't go to a real house and film it at a real house. Is it really that budget specific that you can't go to New Jersey and film some scenes in like a downtown little house? I don't want to be that guy, but it was off at times. And I just wish that the quality was so high that I never felt that way. So I didn't have to kind of like cringe at certain parts to be like, oh, don't watch this part if you've never seen it before.
Again,
I think they're probably trying to explain it by saying it's a younger feeling show here, and like they want it to feel almost like fantastical, specifically that set. And I'm like, I just make it feel real. So it feels like a real girl in New Jersey.
I think that's fair.
So I also felt like that was a step down. Overall, I still had a blast. There was a ton of fun things, a ton of funny things. I am really intrigued with the plot as far as I'm not against them going interdimensional, and I want to know more about that. And this was the first real cliffhanger for me. I thought the main cast acting performances were really good, and it gave us some really good moving moments. But like I said, some of the cinematography was a downgrade. The motivations from the villains was a downgrade, and a few other things. So I think I would say this is like a let's go minus or a that's fair plus. To me, it took a pretty significant step down. Maybe I'll say that's fair plus.
Wow. Yeah. We did not talk about this beforehand at all, but here we are. I think I've been thinking about this a lot today. And I think I'm going to give it a let's go minus. But I really debated between a that's fair plus as well, just because I really did not like the way the Djinn stuff interacted with the story we have going. But ultimately, I thought that, you know, Iman and the main cast performances were still strong enough. And I thought that some of those family moments were so good that I don't want those to get blotted out by the kind of sillier stuff that didn't work for me. Like, I saw AC on Twitter talking about how that moment about, you know, coming over to the States and having very little and having to kind of work to just survive came from kind of her own mom's story and how much that meant to her. And I felt that, like, I felt those moments, like we talked about, enough for it to bump me up to a let's go minus, which for the uninitiated is a B minus, you know? So that's a good, that is not a bad episode of television.
Totally. I'll be interested to see how this finishes now, plot-wise and review-wise. I think they would need some more let's freaking goes to now move this above those two for me, is what I'm thinking.
Yeah. Isn't it so interesting that there are times where I, you know, and I try to keep alive the possibility of this, but there are some times where I see some creators with a character or a property and I'm like, man, I know it's a miracle that this is working so well, but also like it feels so natural to you that there are times where I'm like, I don't really know if you could miss and what it would look like. And like, I get so, again, not that I don't believe, we said multiple times that episode 3 could always be a step down, but it's just funny. Like there are parts of me where I'm like, yeah, like I don't know if the Russos could actually film a bad scene with Steve Rogers, like right now. And it's like, that's sort of how I felt a little bit about this team with Kamala, where I was like, this is just working on such a high level.
To me, the only time that happened, though, was WandaVision and Matt Shakman and Jack Schaefer. And then the first two episodes of this.
Yeah.
But there wasn't a single episode in WandaVision that was ever close to this episode of Ms. Marvel.
You know, but I will say, yeah, 100% agree. Two, this all makes me think, for me personally, I still think Moon Knight might have been the most episode-for-episode consistent series on this front.
You're forgetting stuff from WandaVision. But anyways, let's not get that started.
No, I'm not talking about highs and lows. I'm just saying, thinking WandaVision's flawless. At points of, okay, you know, anyway, just like every episode, it just hitting a home run. And to me, and I know a lot of people don't feel like that about Moon Knight or WandaVision, but I just think Moon Knight, I never came away one week feeling like it had taken a weird dip. And I know some people did feel like that at moments with WandaVision. We don't have to get into all that, but I do just think
they're wrong.
I think Moon Knight, again, because of all the multiverse of madness craziness, I just, you know, I don't want that to get swept under the rug, since we do talk a lot about the relative consistency or inconsistency of these series.
Moon Knight is also virtually flawless, other than the freaking log CGI. Golly, like if they just nailed that part. It's funny. I don't really want to analyze it on that macro of a level yet, just because we don't know the ending. Sure. I mean, think about if I had even paused episodes of season 2 of Daredevil. There were episodes of season 2 of Daredevil that were a missed opportunity, like D's, I thought.
Sure, sure.
For real. So like it, and yet I still love like season 3. Like I love how they wrapped up Daredevil. So my visualization of Daredevil, my headcanon of Daredevil is that it's so freaking good. But there was massive, awful episodes in that. So my point is, even if this takes a downturn, it doesn't mean they couldn't freaking land the plane to the smoothest degree possible, and it will change our perspective on the show from right now at this second. So that's why I don't want to get too far into comparing it to anything else.
No. And that's what I... Yeah, I don't want to compare the series as a whole yet.
I just mean with
the samples we've been given from week to week.
And I was mainly saying that to cover our butts for our listeners, not to you necessarily.
Right. Well, and yeah, so I should say as we wrap, like we just spent the bulk of this episode by far talking about all the stuff that we loved and were intrigued by here. So I don't want people's takeaway to be like, now this is suddenly, you know, our least favorite show, or we hate where it's going, or anything like that. I think the only reason we had to spend a little bit of time on this element is because we were so high on the first two episodes, to the extent where you were like,
correct,
are
you
people just gonna think that
best.
We always give out let's freaking goes?
That is so true. And to the extent that you off camera were telling me this might be the number one Disney Plus series. So
yeah.
Well, let's see what they do with it. I am legitimately now dying to know how they're going to wrap it up.
Agreed. I think that's the one thing that I'll say that is like, I've what pulled me back after the first two episodes was just Iman, really. I mean, like, I loved the characters. I loved just living in that world. But there wasn't a hook for me plot-wise as much.
Correct.
Until now. So that is a positive.
And I want to end on this. This is a weird soapbox to end on. Okay? You ready? This is weird for me.
Yeah, come on.
But, yeah. I'm disappointed a little bit in a few things. I know you saw this because you were tweeting about it, but the first two episodes of Ms. Marvel were the lowest viewed Disney Plus Marvel series thus far, mm-hmm. which disappoints me. I think it's getting overshadowed by Kenobi, which really disappoints me. And I woke up this morning and watched this episode at like 8:30 a.m. and I logged onto our Twitter, and I don't know that any of the keywords from Ms. Marvel were trending at all. And that's just a bummer. Hmm. It's a bummer to me. Also, I'm seeing our listenership on these episodes, and it's just a bummer to me that this show is getting overshadowed a little bit. And to the extent that is the case, we'll have other episodes about that, I think, when this is over, you know, in August. Because we have some hot takes there that we need to need to get across to our listeners a little bit better. And I'm excited now that Kenobi's finished and that the finale of this show actually happens the week after Thor. So at least there is, you know, we can do our whole mega week where they're both happening, but then we have a chance to still like come back a week later and watch the finale, not the day before Thor. So I am thankful that the runway is being cleared a little bit for this show now. So that's how I'll end it. I think from this point on, and with the plot ramping up, I think this show will now get a larger share of the spotlight for a while.
Yeah, I, by the way, would always prefer that. Like, to the people that are like, you guys don't understand, Disney has to do it this way. For some unexplained reason, they must always have a Disney Plus series and a film in theaters. To those people, I will say, okay, I disagree, but to the extent that that has to be true, give it to me this way, at least. Like, just let the finale have its own week. Yep. If that just means moving the schedule by 1 week, if the Disney gods, you know, would be so willing and kind as to acquiesce, then, yeah, because that way we still, you know, yeah, keep the momentum going. Lots of fun stuff to talk about. And, you know, the speed at which the TV and film cycle moves now, like on a press level, is insane. To where, Thor will come out 1 week, and within 8 days of that, our Slack is already talking about like rumors for the next project.
As like a behind the scenes example of that, you and I got the idea to make a Pizza Papa T-shirt that we wanted to sell to our listeners. Uh-huh. And by the time we got around to it, like 3 weeks after Doctor Strange, which was a massive film, I was kind of like, I think we've missed the moment. Like, I feel like it's not talked about as much anymore. And that's just crazy how fast it goes. Yeah, it goes so fast.
That said, if you're listening to this and would buy a Pizza Papa Always Gets Paid t-shirt, let us know. You know, we can take an informal poll.
That's true. If we get a lot of feedback on that, maybe we still make it. I think it'd be a dope shirt, by the way. A Pizza Hut themed shirt, maybe. Right now, wherever you are at, pause this episode and go to social media and follow us on social media, because by the time you're hearing this, I think we are going to be in Burbank, California, in Hollywood, filming a bunch of stuff. Now, I'm hoping we can get on social media all the time. Maybe that's not going to be the case, but we're going to try to keep you updated on Twitter with thoughts of the Thor Love and Thunder premiere, just some behind the scenes of what Robbie and I are getting a chance to do, and maybe even some Instagram lives or stuff like that. So I'm really looking forward to that. Robbie, I'm looking forward to seeing you in about 12 hours and just having a freaking blast in Hollywood together. I mean,
we haven't been to California together since the old tour days.
That's true. We used to go there some. Sacramento, baby. We'll see what kind of trouble we get into, and there might be some fun stuff for us to do on Friday. So just stay in touch with us there. I think that'll be a lot of fun.
Speaking of Thor, by the way, we got a chance to sit down with the creators behind the new expansion coming to the Avengers game that features Jane Foster as the Mighty Thor. And so we've kind of had a lot of different ways to be in that Thor headspace We will be releasing that interview soon, so be on the lookout for that. That game expansion was formally announced yesterday. It's going to be coming out on June 28th, so kind of just in time for folks to whet their appetite ahead of the film. But yeah, if you're someone that plays that game, or if you're just a gamer that's been curious, keep an eye on the feed for some of that coming your way.
Lots of Thor and Miss Marvel Mega Week stuff coming up really soon. As soon as we get a chance to see Thor, we'll have a lot of content coming out. So we can't wait, obviously, if you can't tell. We are unbelievably excited. We'll see you guys soon, next time on Friends from Work.
At Ritual, we're celebrating all moms this Mother's Day, current and aspiring. So whether you're looking for fertility support, natal choline, or our best-selling clinically backed prenatal, we've got you covered. Find your Ritual. Go to ritual.com/podcast and for a limited time, get 40% off your first month. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. Based on net sales from industry data, including Nielsen IQ, Stackline, and Numerator as of Q4 2024 and top 5 products.